give up the fight. You preach a man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. You are dopey and you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold, and half a story has never been told. So now we see the light, we gonna stand up for our rights. Come on, get up, stand up.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that Bob Marley piece, Stand Up and Fight, could be the theme song of Tyrone West's family, because this is the family that has stood up and fought for the last year and a half and has not given up this fight. And so I think maybe that Bob Marley piece should be the theme song. We are joined in studio here by Tawanda Jones, who is Tyrone West's sister. Dana Butler, his aunt, is once again in the studio, brought her daughter, Kiara Butler, who has something to say as well, over there. And on the phone with us, we have our other guest, Dr. Heber Brown, is with us. The Reverend Dr. Heber Brown is pastor at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church and leading community activist Jason Rodriguez, one of the co-founders of Baltimore Chapter of Cop Watch, and J. Wendell Gordon, a leading attorney in our town, and civil rights attorney, another attorney in the city, have joined us here by phone. They were all part of this discussion that took place at the Empowerment Temple on Tuesday night. Tuesday night?
Yes.
Tuesday night,
yes.
We couldn't go to. We really wanted to be there. That was covered by friends of ours at the Real News Network that shot the whole thing, and that'll be up online at some point. And we had a board meeting, so we couldn't join that. But it was a meeting about Ferguson. It was an interesting panel. The mayor was there. The police were represented there with a very interesting commentary by the police in that the police officer that night. So we're going to cover that and the connection between Ferguson and Baltimore. Welcome all of you to the Mark Steiner Show. Once again, good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. And the number here is 410-319-8888. You can certainly write to it here, talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages, which I'll check. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Let me begin, if I might, with you, Heber Brown. And Heber, always good to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Mark.
So we can't see, but at least we got your voice. We got Indeed. You. In spirit and in mind.
Always.
So one of the things that I was really struck by, well, let me take a step backwards. Heber, describe for us who called this meeting and why it took place.
This meeting, as I understand, this town hall was organized in partnership between Radio One and Pastor Jamal Bryan of the Empowerment Temple Church. And the Radio One suspended their normal programming that night in order to broadcast the town hall over the airwaves, and a number of elected officials and city servant leaders and the like were there as well, including Congressman Elijah Cummings. The mayor was there. The Democratic nominee for city state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, was there. A number of city council people were there as well, in addition to business leaders and community leaders as well.
So the mayor spoke and we talked about the poor young girl in Waverly and how they say they know who it is, but the community won't come forth, and that was kind of her statement, which we can talk about in a bit because I think it's an important piece of the conversation as well. But then, Heber, you came back with what I've seen on tape. I didn't hear it live, but I watched what TRNN taped and heard what you said. A pretty stunning opening comment. From what I hear about 1942, would you mind reprising that a bit to tell our listeners what happened and what you said and why you said it?
Sure, no problem. Yeah, I've been living in the libraries of Baltimore for the past couple of weeks, just digging up a lot of research and information about our history as a city. And I came across this fascinating story about Thomas Brodus, who was actually a private Thomas Brodus, who was shot multiple times by a Baltimore City police officer named Officer Bender, and it was witnessed by a number of people at the time. And Carl Murphy, who was the editor of the Afro-American newspaper, along with Lily Mae Jackson from the NAACP, and many other leaders, religious leaders, community leaders, organized this massive march on Annapolis. About 2,000 African-Americans and allies got together and marched on Annapolis, demanded a meeting with the governor. The governor at that time's name was Herbert O'Connor. They met with him, Millard Taws, and a few others, and they listed out their demands, one of which was an end to police brutality and they lifted by name Thomas Brodus. In their sharing, though, they also said that between 1939 and 1942, there had been 10 killings by Baltimore City police officers, and they were raising all of them. So it wasn't just about Thomas Brodus. They were raising this issue of police brutality, and this was 1942, and it just struck me that 72 years after that march on Annapolis, we're still marching on the issue of police brutality, and that it's time for, I believe, our community to not allow our children or children's children to inherit this fight. It's time for us to end it now.
And I think you also said that you did not want your children to be doing the same march.
Exactly.
J. Wendell Gordon, thanks for joining us here as well. You were there on the panel, and let me bring you into this. I know you don't have much time to spend with this day because you have court, but talk a bit about what this panel said to you and why you were there. Wendell, you there? Do we have Jay Wendell piped up? Okay, maybe he's on. If he comes back, we'll bring him right back in. But I'm curious what you all think was the importance. I know Jason, you weren't there. Wendell, is that you? Are you there?
I was there, Mark. This is Brother Jason.
How are you?
All right, sir. And if Jay Wendell's not here, I remember quite a bit what Jay Wendell was discussing that evening. Most of the stuff that he was concentrating on was mainly the law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights. He had a great discussion about... Hello?
Go ahead. You're there, Jason. Keep going. We just lost Heber. We'll get him right back.
All right. I was saying that he was discussing the fact about the law enforcement officer's Bill of Rights and how it's probably one of the most deadliest pieces of legislation to come out of Annapolis since the death penalty law. And we know that the death penalty law since has been repealed. He really is encouraging the community to really look at going after the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights, getting in contact with our legislators, and really pushing them to look at this issue. Even if we don't change it fully and amend it fully, at least to start taking a look at it. He also discussed about the fact that the court system... it's not like it was back in the 60s and the 70s during the civil rights movement where it seemed to welcome blacks into the court system and encourage the fight for rights and civil rights at that time. Now, they don't like us. They look at us now and they really don't like us in the court system. And one of the things that really kind of touched me was how he said that a lot of times it's about the three D's, about deny, defame, and destroy, about how when these officers go into court, that's their main objective. And there may be some constitutionality issues in a lot of these arrests, but it's not looked at in the court system, and we never have the legal paralysis. We never have the legal... representation to be able to defend against a lot of these charges and allegations that come, on our communities. We don't have a way to defend against this. And a lot of times the officers' words are taken line for line, word for word, without any scrutiny. And unless you really invest into a good lawyer and really battle it out, a lot of times, these young men are railroaded and colored with a broad brush of the law and charged in the process. So, I really appreciate Dr. Jamal Bryant having this forum because we really need to start discussing some of these issues that have kind of plagued our community, for over 72 years, like Dr. Hubert Brown said. These issues have been in our community for quite some time. We've been able to address some of them, like
right.
The death penalty, but there's still more legislation that's really carried on from the Jim Crow era that really wasn't meant to encourage success in our community. If anything, it was more or less to ostracize us in our community.
Jason, I want just jumping in because the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown got back with us, and before I turn back to the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, Tawanda Jones is with us, and originally, Tawanda, you were supposed to be on the panel.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. But I guess, I really don't know what happened, because they said that they were going to do a second panel, too. Because at first I was sitting there, but then Abdul Salam knocked on the door, and he, you know, said he was my family member, and could he be on the panel with me? And then from that point, they went in the room and, you know, had like a little meeting, a little 10 to 15 minute meeting, and then it came back. It was like, well, since he's going to be on there with you, we'll just do a two-part. We'll bring out, you know, a two-panel, because we only have enough for, you know, a few people to go on the first time, so I don't know what happened.
And what were you going to add, Kiara Butler, that you said you heard?
What disturbed me from the town hall meeting was how it was almost justifiable, the condition of police brutality, because of how black people are presenting themselves. Basically, if we carried ourselves better, if we held ourselves up to a different standard, that we wouldn't be attacked, wouldn't be brutalized.
Who said that?
That was kind of the way it was going at first.
You felt like that was the tenor of the meeting. That was the sense of the meeting.
Yes, and I don't agree with that. If anything, that borderlines rape culture. That if you dress a certain way, if you look a certain way, then maybe you won't get raped. And I don't agree with that. I feel as though I shouldn't have to raise my children to neglect a part of their culture just to fit in, just to not be harassed, just to not be killed. I think that's outrageous. No other culture is asked to suppress who they are to survive. And I feel like that's what they're asking us to do. And I feel like that's ridiculous.
Heber, I'd like you to jump in on that comment as well. I think this has been brought up more and more before. There's a debate here not long ago on this program where one of the guests said to another guest, let me thank you for making me sound, for forcing us to be respectable, quote unquote. Heber?
Yeah, I think that the issue of respectability politics is a troublesome one, and it's one that we have, you know, unfortunately been hearing and talking a lot about since and even before Ferguson. But I think my sister who spoke before is absolutely right. That really is not the issue. It really serves to muddy the waters of real clear dialogue.
Right.
Because the reality is that whether I have my pants up or not, I can still get bust upside my head.
Right.
And I still get arrested. I mean, it was interesting, even as Congressman Cummings made one of the comments related to this whole piece about respectability politics. As he was speaking, I was thinking about Skip Gates, who was arrested in his home by the police in his neighborhood, which eventually led to the so-called beer summit at the White House. That one incident, and there's so many more, but that one incident goes to show whether you have your pants up or down, or whether you brush your hair or not, all those things, that's really not the issue. Right. It's really a way to avert what the real issue is all about.
Let me go to the phone so I want to hear what listeners are saying and come back to Jason Rodriguez and the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, our guests in the studio here, Tawanda Jones, Diana Butler, Kiara Butler, who are all part of Tyrone West family in the studio with us. They always travel together. We might say bring one, but nope, can't be that way. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Sorry, I had to add a little humor into it. We need a little levity once in a while.
Absolutely.
410-319-8888. Halima, welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
How is everyone doing?
Very well. Welcome.
Good. My comment is in regards to having proper representation. And proper representation is in regards to the fact of respecting citizens of the United States. If the Caucasian development of the political lawyership between all states, not signaling out just one, because I'm going to tell you, I am totally deplore with Ohio and West Virginia. If they are defiled and foul in the courts of law, then they're not representing us. And that's why you always going to have a problem with what we call so-called Negro black folks, because I'm not no nigger, for one. Mm. When you boycott and blackball, the same bull crap is still going on. And if you don't want to be defiled outside of your mouth, to be fouled back, you don't sit up there and tell the courts of law, judge, white. Miss Ali said that she's a mother effing warrior of a law and going to kill all Americans. And I said to him, use a mother for you lie.
Helen, we have to really be careful language on the radio. The station could get fined. FCC could fine the station, put it out of business. We have to be very careful about the language we use on the air because there's laws about that, and I don't want to get our station in trouble. And we want to stay on the air. We have a lot to say. So please join us here, 410-319-8888. We need to have your voices here. But let me, one of the things I did want to probe, there were some things I heard about that night. Let me go to Jason and Hebert to talk a bit about what they heard, maybe people in the studio. There was a police officer there whose name was Efren Edwards, a detective.
Yes.
And what I understood Hebert, he was saying was that he has to warn his own sons about what to do and which police officers to watch out for, and there were certain officers who shouldn't even be on the force. I was pretty shocked he had the kind of courage to even say that in uniform.
Yeah, I was shocked that he also made a statement that he doesn't even allow his children within city limits without a parental escort or an adult escort. I found that kind of troubling as well, because we should be able to come into our city and enjoy a lot of the fine features that we have, arts and entertainment and enjoying our harbor without being in fear of our children's lives. And that's what we seem to be in now, in fear for our children's life within the city. And I just found it very disturbing that Officer Edwards had made that statement. I'm not sure if Hubert could add something to that.
Hubert?
Yeah, I think it was... It was quite telling, and actually I appreciated the candor of his remarks when he spoke about the fact that he knows that there are some people who wear the badge in the Baltimore City Police Department who should not be on the force.
Yes.
That was the first time I heard an officer on the record say something like that, to actually make that admission, so that there are officers who should not be officers. And while I appreciated that, I slightly disagree with the latter part of that statement, where he said that the commissioner is working as hard as he can and others are working as hard as they can to solve that problem, but it won't happen overnight. We have to let the system work it out. That's where I have disagreement, because while we're waiting on the system to try to figure it out and work it out, our sons, our daughters, our families are subject to brutality and harassment by people that even the city knows shouldn't be on the force. And so I think it's incumbent upon the community to put pressure on the police department, on the mayor, to gain control over the police department, so that we're not waiting for them to correct their inadequate system.
Mark, just to add, I think I understand, though, where he was coming from, because we discussed it kind of earlier with Jay Wendell. You know, it really falls back onto the officers' Bill of Rights and the protections that they have. And Jay Wendell Gordon was going through the process of how it takes 10 days just before an officer is even interviewed, and an officer then, you know, has the right to a lawyer and has the right to deny this and deny that, and, you know, and it's just a bunch of denial processes and unaccountability. We know where to go in order to change this, and I understand police officers, Officer Edwards, you could hear it in his voice. It sounded like he was being confined. He was being restrained, like he really wants to do something about this, but they can't do anything about this because of the fact that these protections are on the books, and these protections give more rights to officers than they do the citizens, and that should not be the case. We need to attack that. We need to give the power back to the people and not give it back to necessarily the state or the city.
Folks, we want to have you join us here, please. 410-319-8888. Write to us here, talk at steinershow.org, or tweet us at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this? Were you about to say something? I want to have a very specific question, but you have something ready to say, please say it.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to let everybody know that yesterday we had just started the West Coalition, and we haven't introduced the legislation now, so.
And what's the legislation going to be?
And that's 10 demands. And that's like some of the things like eating at the Bill of Rights, putting body cams on officers, different things like that that we're demanding.
So we need to kind of refocus on that for an entire hour, just to talk about these demands you're making and get other people on to talk about those as well with you, so we can push that as this legislative session comes about in Annapolis. But I'm curious from all of you, and let me start with you, Heber, and go around the room. What was the significance of that, of what happened the other night? I mean, what comes out of that?
Yeah, you know, Baltimore is rich in roundtables and town halls. We've had a number of them over the years. And
right.
So over the years that I've been attending forums like this, my expectations have been, you know, just recalibrated to what really can come out of a setting like that. Really, the platform is just speaking to some of the issues and giving a platform and giving audience to concerns and potential solutions. Really, the most important and valuable part of the night for me actually came after the event was over, and people were standing around talking, organizing, sharing information about their organizations or their causes. That really was the most valuable piece for me. And so for me, that's what came out of it. I came out of it with a lot of information, contact information for other people, organizations, and I've already started having meetings with people who I met for the first time on Tuesday night. So the organizing, as I said, Tuesday, organize, that aspect came out of it for me personally.
Twanda?
Yes, and I think that Heber Brown touched on a lot of points that was really interesting, and I like the things that he said, so that was good. And what mainly came to me from out of it was that I think really they know that Baltimore is suffering. And, you know, and you're going to Ferguson, you know, to back them, and we're crying. We're crying. We're Ferguson right here in Baltimore. We've been Ferguson way before July the 18th, 2013, when my brother Tyrone West was brutally murdered. That's it's right. been Ferguson when Anthony Anderson was brutally murdered. Booker T. Wells III, Maurice Jones, Dale Graham, the list goes on. So my thing is, I feel like that's just because they know what Ferguson doing. It's like, you know, all them done been to Ferguson to support them, so you had to come back and take care of home first and then go to Ferguson.
So, listeners, what do you think? 410-319-8888. Let's go back to the phones and your thoughts on this. I don't know if you were there because it was a fairly small audience there. It wasn't that large. Am I right about that?
Right.
Yeah. 410-319-8888. Charles, you're on the air.
How you doing? I want to say a couple of things. I do think that we need to attack the office's Bill of Rights. That's the first thing. But I think that when you attach stuff to it without the research to back it up, you deprive the community of resources. You can go to the Wall Street Journal militarization thing. It takes up to $198 to $380, and that's depending upon the equipment of the car, to equip officers with cameras, or vest cameras as they're called. And then the second thing is that those cameras can only record up to so much information. That's just technology. If you would take those same dollars, attack the Bill of Rights, and provide resources in our community to deal with those kids and community who need help. Throwing more money into a department that's unable to spend is wrong. Attacking their Bill of Rights and reforming them so that they are called to protect and serve the citizens. We've created a police department where they no longer believe in the mantra protect and serve. There's no resources in the department to solve crime, just the staff overtime. So that's my only comment. I wish that they would redeflect having officers to wear vest cams and putting that money somewhere else. But I do agree, attack that Bill of Rights.
We just got a tweet from the Housing Policy Watch that tweeted in just now, less talk, more work. But, I mean, what are the specifics? Tangibly, I mean, how do we make this happen? Heber?
Can I speak to real quick? First, I'm not sure where the caller got the numbers from in terms of the cameras, but the reality is that Baltimore spends millions of dollars every year on settlements because of police officers who engage in brutality and the like. So we have it's not a matter of finding the money. Baltimore spends the money anyway. It's redirecting on the front end. And cameras is not a panacea. I think your caller is right. But it is a step in the direction of transparency. I spoke about grand juries, and I echo and co-sign and support the West Coalition, and they are calling for more grand juries in Baltimore. And
yes,
I echo that on Tuesday night
for
these highly controversial and questionable incidents. I think it's time, Mark, to abolish the Civilian Review Board and replace it with community-led accountability councils.
Yes.
So instead of that sitting down, and that Civilian Review Board sitting down in City Hall with no power, no subpoena power, or anything, bring community-led accountability councils into local communities and have them to report and share information about local incidents with the major and the commanders of those communities. So we're closer, you know, face-to-face. Sometimes, like I've spoken about on your airways before, like the pastor who was beat up, who was accosted and harassed by police at his home. They gave him one number, then another number, then another name, and another name, until he got so tired, he said, man, just forget it. And so we got to bring that closer to the community. Also, the local communities, I believe, need to have a say in the hiring and deployment policies of the local police department.
Yes, right.
So here's all this talk. People say, we need to have a relationship with the community. We got to have a relationship. But the reality is, we don't know even the names of police officers until they beat somebody over the head.
Absolutely.
If you want to have a relationship, I got to know who the people are. The fact is, community members know the drug dealers better than they know the police officers.
Right.
We know their families, their names, their grandmama and them, where they grew up, whatever. We don't know these officers. We don't have a say in what communities they're deployed to. And so if there's an officer, for instance, that has red flags in his background and her background about around race or around poverty, stuff that says maybe you don't need to patrol this community because you got some issues in your file or folder, the community should review that and have a say in whether or not they want this person driving around with a gun in their neighborhood. In addition to that, create safety patrols similar to Shamrim in Upper Park Heights, where local communities start to police themselves and police the police. We talked about the Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights. And then finally, cooperative economics. I believe local communities, especially black communities, have to control the economics of their own community because, as I said on Tuesday, beggars are not in a position to make demands.
Right. We just had Meredith Moyes just tweeted in and said, Baltimore is Ferguson. We must organize for accountability and justice.
Amen.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And I'm curious, you know, I'd be really interested to explore how this idea you have, Heber, would actually work of local community councils. I mean, I've never heard that thought before. It's brand new to me.
Was to me, too. And I mean, I'm not lying. I was spending almost a night in University of Baltimore's library, a fascinating resource. But in the 40s and 50s, this idea was put out there about local community councils. So I can't even claim this this is the genius of Heber Brown. No, I just read a book. I just read a book and picked up some old newspapers. They were saying this in the 40s about local community councils. And so while the nuts and bolts and the logistics of it would need to be hammered out for our time, the idea is not brand new. And really, too, Mark, we don't have to wait for permission from the city to institute our own civilian review boards.
Amen.
Local communities can organize themselves right now and set up their own boards, and through their community association or churches or civic organizations, begin collecting these complaints about police brutality and harassment and report them to the local district commanders, send them to the press. I'd love to see local newspapers in Baltimore post the names and incidences of police brutality and harassment in the paper every week, just like we hear about the allegations against black men and black women every week. So if we can post, as I said on Tuesday, we can post the names and the circumstances of people who are just alleged to have committed a crime, if that can go in the paper and across the TV, why can't we post the names and the incidents of officers who are alleged to have committed a crime or at least engaged in brutality or harassment in some case? That will start to tip the scales of power, I believe.
And one of the pieces that I read that we can talk about after break a bit, and Jason, you might know some of this about this as well, is that there was an interesting study that was done that I read just the other week in the New York Times about the race gap. It was called the Race Gap in America's Police Departments, that in communities, whether they were across America, whether they were majority Mexican or majority African-American or majority any community of color in this country, that the majority of the police in those forces are always white. And that's an issue, I think, that for many people to wrestle with. And with that change things, how do you change that? Police forces say they cannot recruit African-American officers. You know, that's another issue. We should talk about that. How real is that? And so we're going to wrestle all those. And then with J. Wendell Gordon has just gotten out of court. He's rejoined us. And we are going to we're going to take a short break and come right back with all of our guests to take your calls. Edward and Joseph, we'll get you on the air. We're going to go right to Wendell, J. Wendell Gordon, see what he has to say, and to our guests here in studio as well, Diana Butler, Kiara Butler, and Tawanda Jones. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I said it won't be too long, whether I'm right or wrong. Won't be too long, whether I'm right or wrong. All my life I've been a lonely man, teaching people who don't understand. Even though I try my best, I still can't find no happiness. Stop the train, I'm leaving. Stop the train, I'm leaving. Believe me when I say, stop the train, I'm leaving. I said it won't be too long, whether I'm right or wrong. Won't be too long, whether I'm right or wrong. Some go east, some go west. Some stand aside to do their best. Some in the deep of the most.
Didn't he ramble? Didn't he ramble? He rambled all around.
That's Harry Connick. Didn't he ramble? The pianist, singer, songwriter, composer, arranger, born on this day in 1967 in New Orleans. And earlier when I was talking about Get Up, Stand Up, I miscorrectly said it was Bob Marley, it was Peter Tosh, who was part of the Wailers. And we played that actually not because of the show, but we could have because of the show. It was actually played because he died on this day, so that was the reason we played the song, but it fit perfectly into what we were talking about. So you can all join us here at 410-319-8888 as we talk about the meeting that took place at Empowerment Temple Tuesday night. And some of the people who were there are joining us. We have in the studio here Tawanda Jones, who is Tyrone West's sister, Diana Butler, Tyrone West's aunt, Kiara Butler, who is Tyrone's cousin and the daughter of Diana Butler. We have joining us by phone the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, pastor of Pleasant Hill Baptist Church, Jason Rodriguez, one of the co-founders of Baltimore chapter of Cop Watch, and J. Wendell Gordon, attorney, all who are there. 410-319-8888 number. Wendell, since you're back, J. Wendell, why don't you jump in and have a comment, and then we'll go back into it.
Well, I heard the question that you had just asked with regard to policing and those who these police forces that are disproportionately do not represent the citizens who they protect and serve, and whether or not or why this is an issue. It's interesting that I had a good conversation with a Baltimore County sheriff, African-American sheriff, who made a very profound statement to me yesterday with regard to recruiting more officers. He says, he goes around and he tells young men, he says, you have to make sure your record's clean. He said, today, for a young African-American male, a clean record is the equivalent of a college degree. Mm-hmm. And when he said that to me, it kind of struck me, and I was like, wow, I didn't really understand. When he said it, it was like, wow, that's what it's come to, because, you know, college degrees among African-American men seem to be rare. Oh, not rare, but at least I shouldn't even say scarce, but not in whole abundance. But now we're in a situation where young men with clean records, we don't see that as often as we used to back in the day. And that is one of the tools that they use to weed out people who endeavor to become law enforcement officers. And probably so, they have to look at their records. And so I think that a police force should reflect the citizens that they represent. I think that although the police cannot enforce any residency requirements, they can incentivize officers to move into the areas in which they are hired to police. And I think that would be very helpful. Now, in terms of the mood at the town hall meeting, Heber was wonderful. Everybody was wonderful. I think acknowledgments should go out to Russell Nevedon because he was there. Participated in his own right, and he brought some thoughtful comments to and questions to the forum. So I think it was a fantastic event. No, none of the problems got solved that night, and those who were looking for absolute solutions for the problems that's been plaguing us for hundreds and hundreds of years at Empowerment Temple on September 9th, they probably were woefully disappointed that they didn't get what they were looking for, but it's a step in the right direction, and I think if we can continue with the momentum, I think one day, and hopefully before Huber's grandchildren have to deal with the issues that we're dealing with as we were represented during the forum, we will have these issues solved. But I think the lawyers need tools, and you can cut me off if I'm rambling, but the lawyers need tools.
About 30 seconds, man, about 30 seconds.
Let me just get this off. The lawyers need tools to be able to help with some of these issues, and one of the tools that we could use is we can increase the damages caps on the local government and Maryland Tort Claims Act, as well as we need to do away with the 10-day rule with regard to the FEOBR. That is the law enforcement officer's bill of rights, because I always felt that that is one of the most deadliest pieces of legislation that's come out of the General Assembly since its enactment in 1974. And I wholly believe that it's responsible for more deaths of Marylanders in this state than the Death Penalty Act during that same period of time, because of the laws that the rights that it affords police officers that they do not afford common citizens. So, and those rights actually stymie meaningful investigations.
Let me just say that a tweet just came in that reminded me about that. The Real News will have the video of last night's event up on their website at realnews.com tonight. So they're working on that now. That from the other night will be up. Where all the things you're going to hear, the entire thing that Heber Brown said that night and more will be up on that site, so you can see that.
Cool.
One of the things that we talked about here in the studio during break, and I was thinking about a lot, and actually it was Diana Butler who said it, but we have been thinking about this. Heber and Jason, let me go to the two of you next. Before we go to the phones, trying to get callers in before the end of the segment, is that given everything that's happened in Baltimore over the years, for as long as I have been alive, and before me, and in this moment, why did the town hall meeting have to be about Ferguson rather than be about Baltimore?
Right. Absolutely.
That's one of the things that kind of struck me. It took Ferguson to make us talk about something that happens all the time here in our own city.
See, I respectfully disagree with that. We've been talking about these issues for a long time. Ferguson is the spark to get all the people involved. But, you know, the thought leaders, the activists, Heber, myself, Russell Neverdon, and those who are on stage, we've all been addressing these issues ever since Russell and I have been practicing law, Heber ever since I've known him, which is over 10 years. So when people say that, why now, or why don't you all do this for black-on-black crime and all these other things, we've been doing this for all the issues, and that's not just the Ferguson-type issues, but the black-on-black crime issues, the education issues, the teenage pregnancy issues.
Okay, well, we only have a couple minutes left. Heber, you want to jump into that question, and Jason, then before we have to round this out?
Yeah, real quick, I concur with Jason on the point, but I also say that sometimes it's easier for us to be activists and protest things that are farther away. You know, when we protest issues that are far away, the potential consequences for speaking out are not as strong. And some people can be real radical about issues that are across the world, but when it comes to addressing issues right at home, you think twice, because there are some, you know, very real sacrifices and potential consequences that can come. But that notwithstanding, I think that it is important that when these issues come, take full advantage of every opportunity to organize, and so I'm glad it happened.
Jason?
Yeah, I agree with the organizing thing, too. One of the things that we have to start creating groups. Pastor Heber Brown said it clearly that night. You know, when the Greeks in our city have meetings and the mayor shows up, they have a commanding list of demands and what it is that they want for their community. When the Jewish folks do it, it's the same thing. We need to start commanding exactly what it is that we want from our governance and start writing it out. Too many times, we're willing to, how Heber Brown said, we're willing to take these Instagram shots of our politicians and these selfies with politicians, but we're not willing to sit down and write a commanding letter that puts out exactly what it is that we need and we expect.
you know.
So we have only a couple minutes left. So let me get some closing thoughts from everybody here, and I'll give my closing thought as well. I'm going to let you know where you can watch this video of all this stuff tonight in just a second as well. So who wants to begin the family?
I want
to
say
to
something.
Wanda, I'm sure you do.
I was just curious as to why Russell Neverdon wasn't even sitting on the panel. I think he should have been on the panel. And I also think David Anthony Wiggins, who's running for sheriff and is totally against police brutality, he should have been invited. That's my thought.
As the mother of Tyrone West, I was totally, totally outraged with that town hall meeting. Number one, we did not attack the issues. Number two, you waited until Ferguson, the incident with Ferguson, to come out as a people to try to let's get together and see how we can fight the injustices that has been put upon our black men for years back. Okay, now all of a sudden everybody wants to jump on it that Ferguson is out. I have a problem with that. Open your back door. Look out your back door. Okay, it's been here. It's still here. And we need to stick together and fight and attack this problem with police brutality. Or guess what? It's going to be your loved one next.
Amen.
Kiara.
I just wanted to add, you know, even though Ferguson excited something in America to organize, I feel like this is a good time for everyone to keep going and to further what's going on and to put a spotlight on what's going on right here in the city. And that's what we're hoping we will accomplish with the West Coalition. We actually have written out a list of demands, over 10 demands, of what we are looking for from the city, from the state, and possibly nationwide legislation. So we've already taken that step to better the community, and we want to see this not only in Baltimore, but across the nation.
And we will put these demands on our website as well from the Tyrone West Family Coalition. That'll be on our website. Letting on a couple quick things before we break out of here. Do we have time to take one or two callers before we go? Let's have them a final say. But I want to just let you all know that the Baltimore Block will have it up on YouTube. That's BLOC. I think it may be now or very soon up on the Real News as well, so everybody can see what was going on. And let me just say also that I was thinking a lot about this. I think that they do need to be kind of people's community patrols. Though I think that using the example of Shom Rim doesn't work, because the problem with something like Shom Rim is patrolling an interracial community with a small group of people that don't reflect that community. And I think that's a real problem with Shom Rim. And I think that the communities do need to kind of patrol where they are and to see what's going on. We had a thought here. Jacqueline wrote in. I'll just read this since I wrote it in. We can kind of wrestle with this on another day, but I'll read it anyway. I find it troubling, but not surprising, the forum was held at Empowerment Temple. Empowerment Temple is led by a pastor who calls gay people sanctified sissies and quotes Chris Brown calling women hoes. He has been openly judgmental and has contributed to the stereotyping of individuals in the community that would likely have contact with law enforcement. Can we really move forward with our political leaders having this kind of religious doctrine validation? So that's in from Jacqueline, who writes that in. And put
excellent,
that out there.
Jacqueline.
And let that be added to the thought of where we are with the society. So can we take one call? Yes, no, tell me you're the producer. Okay, yes. So let's go to Joseph. Quick thought from you, Joseph, before we have to go.
Good afternoon.
Joseph, before you start, we have less than a minute, so we go ahead.
I'm against the Empowerment Temple, and I just want to say that organizing is a very good idea. And I think maybe we should look at our neighborhood community associations and start with those. How many members at the Empowerment Temple Media are members of their community association? I think that's a very big grassroots place to start organizing. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's go to Eugene in Nottingham. A quick thought.
Hi. I just wanted to say, well, two things. One, about relationships with cops. As a black man myself who just turned 46, I have not had necessarily bad experiences with the cops. I think from my own personal point of view and what I've seen with the people that I've known, you usually get what you give, and if you give cops a lot of mouth and a lot of attitude, you will get that in return. However, when I've been to cops...
No, you didn't.
You can come right back down. Let him just finish. Finish what you were saying, Eugene.
When I've been stopped and handled myself a certain way, it usually diffuses the situation. There are times when I've been stopped with cops where I can tell they really want to do something. You can tell sometimes when people really don't have good intentions. But quite often, if you handle it a certain way, you can defuse a ticking time bomb as opposed to adding fuel to an explosive situation. You don't have to make a bad situation worse. You can just do your best to get out of it. Because the key when I get stopped by a cop is I don't want to get shot and killed and be called a casualty. I'm trying to figure out how to get out of it. And I think that's what we need to think about when we're in that situation. You're not in a position of power. You know, do what you can to get out of it.
Eugene, I appreciate the call, but if Diana, if you want to say something, I'll let Heber kind of respond as well. But Diana.
First and foremost, what are you, a cop? Let me tell you, we're dealing with some real issues here, sir. We're dealing with black men being harassed for no reason.
Yes, pulled
okay?
out their car
you
by
are lucky. You are
N-word.
Lucky this has not been put on you or your family. This is real pain here, sir. And you better appreciate not being beat the crap out of. But you better think about what you're saying out of your mouth to black people. Okay, we're being beaten brutally. We're being taken back to slavery. Okay? Sir, you better rethink what you just said.
Yeah, Mark, my son growing up in Brooklyn Home Housing Projects as a child has had a gun to the back of his head from police officers, has been stripped out of his clothes, was stripped out of his football uniform. My son was a varsity football player, played quarterback for Southwestern, and was an honorable student. Has never been in trouble his whole life, but just because he was a dark-colored black man who happened to be wearing a white tee, who happened to be wearing some Jordans that his father worked hard for, that his mother worked hard for, he still ends up thrown to the ground.
Exactly.
Checked in his pants, checked in his buttocks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You know, disrespected. And this was a child. He was a minor. And the stigma that has placed on him as an adult. He is 25 now. Mm. And he fears for the police.
Yes.
He looks over his shoulder for the police. Mm. And he's not a criminal. He works. He has a high security clearance. He's worked out at the airport. He's a security guard now for a very respectable firm in Baltimore City. Mm. He's never been in trouble. So why does he have to be picked on because he's in a high crime community and he happens to be black?
Okay.
Thank you.
Excellent.
That has to be the closing thought for today because we're running out of time for our next guest to come in. But I think this has been a very powerful discussion, as it always is. Jason Rodriguez, thanks for your work. Good to have you on the air. Thanks for that closing statement.
Yeah, thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you for that.
The Reverend Dr. Heber Brown, my brother, always good to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Mark.
J. Wendell Gordon, good to have you on the show. It's been a while. Glad you could join us as well.
My pleasure. Thank you for your patience with me.
No problem. Patience. We all have to have patience, and not so with the small stuff. Too many big things for us to wrestle with.
Right.
And Tawanda Jones, Diana Butler, Kara Butler on the air with the family. Good to have you here. Tyrone Weiss, good to have you always.
Thank
as
you
well.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will take a short break and come back, and we're going to then probe what President Barack Obama said last night about the Islamic State in a conversation debate on that particular issue. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Don't go away.